Welcome to the Business Radio Network. Enjoy Small Biz, Big Voices with Stephanie Rising.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Rising, a business coach and author in beautiful Tucson, Arizona. Being a small business owner is rewarding, but can feel lonely. Few people understand what it's like to sweat payroll, market themselves as a brand, or create revenue streams from scratch. For the next hour, join your tribe on Small Biz, Big Voices, the podcast that celebrates the stories and impact of your fellow small business owners. Today, we're going to visit with Victor Thompson of Green Toes Day Spa. Our interview will conclude with a Proust lightning round, and our final segment will be Dear Coach, when I'll coach listeners through issues they've emailed in. First, it's my pleasure to introduce Victor Thompson. Victor is the owner of Green Toes, an eco-chic mani-pedi studio and day spa. Born and raised in Tucson, Victor's early career path took him to the health and fitness industry, where he excelled in sales, marketing, and management. His success was based on his desire to provide genuine solutions for his clients. Victor left his fitness career to take over Green Toes after his wife, Christina, was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis and was unable to continue operating the business that she had started. Victor's prior familiarity in the health and wellness field helped him to adapt very quickly to a rapidly growing health and beauty profession. Victor is highly motivated to serve the Tucson community by creating a professional place of business for those in the service industry, as well as maintaining high service and hygiene standards for his clients. As an eco day spa, Green Toes uses only the very best natural and organic ingredients. They pamper their clients with the healthiest and most effective skincare products. They aim to cater to all people, including those with chemical sensitivities. Their calm environment and organic products have earned Green Toes many recognitions, including being voted as one of Tucson's top three day spas. Victor, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Now, how you came to own and operate Green Toes is really a love story, and I thought that this was very touching when you shared this with me. Your wife, Christina, created Green Toes, and it was literally her dream business. The whole concept for it, the model for it, came to her in a dream. Tell us how you came to be involved in running the company.
Well, that's kind of an interesting story. Yes, everything, this whole concept of the eco-friendly concept came to my wife, Christina, in a dream. From the look, the style of the place, to the look of the, you know, the products that she wanted to, that she envisioned having. You know, one thing you got to understand is Christina was a teacher here in Tucson for almost 17 years, so she didn't really have any preconceived ideas about opening up a nail salon or day spa. So this dream came to her and kind of shook her a little bit. And when I woke up, she was like basically staring at me like with bright eyes, like, I got to tell you this story or this dream I had. And I said, well, what? She just had these big bright eyes, and it's like, I don't even know where this came from. So she told me about this concept and this dream, and I was like, and I said to her, that sounds interesting. Is anybody doing that? And she says, I don't know. I said, well, it sounds like a neat concept. Why don't you look into it? 11 months later, she opened up the business.
That's amazing. And no business background. I mean, she had been a teacher, and she just felt that passionately about pursuing this idea.
She did. During the 11 months that, you know, while she was putting this whole thing together, she did create a business plan, business concept. She searched and searched and searched for other like-minded businesses that would align with her vision. And at one point, she thought she was gonna have to create her own nail line because we just weren't, well, she wasn't finding anything that aligned with her original vision that she had during this dream. So she had very specific ideas laid out to her, in steps. And part of that was to find something that was healthier for the consumers and for the workers that were that are in the space, because most people understand that anytime you walk by or go into a nail salon, that there's a lot of chemicals involved and there's a lot of toxic odor. So you're inhaling these things and you're putting these chemicals on your body. So finally, she was able to find at the last minute, you know, find a manufacturer that looked and felt like what she wanted. And so that's who we've stuck with from day one. And that's who we still use. And they're kind of the pioneers of the healthier, eco-friendly, vegan nail line in the market. Mm-hmm. You know, some people are familiar with the big three, toxic-free. It started out years ago. So, you know, anybody who's looking for something a little bit less toxic understands the big three. Because the big three is three of the most toxic chemicals that come in nail lacquers, nail polishes.
And what are those?
Well, formaldehyde is one, DBP, and then toluene. So those are the big three. And so the brand that we use was the first to come out with 3-free, and then it became 5-free, and then it became 7-free. And along the way, other manufacturers tried to, you know, kind of emulate those same similarities, but they're not the same. You know, they're not all vegan where they don't, you know, some might say they're vegan, but they still have animal byproducts in there. You know, the product we use is vegan. They don't test on animals. There are no animal byproducts. Some of the colors for the nail lacquers come from, you know, bugs or different animals, fish scales, you know, things like that to give it the shimmer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this particular brand that we use does not use that. And as far as being healthier, now they're 13-free. So they have removed all these different ingredients that they've found more and more research out about the cause allergy problems, birth defects, you know, asthma issues, you know, just skin irritations, all those types of things that you should worry about when you're putting these products on your body.
Right.
You
know? And whatever gets absorbed through the skin goes directly into your bloodstream. And we're going to definitely get a little deeper into that New York Times article that you told me about, because I read it and it was pretty scary. It was very scary.
Right.
And I want to make sure that we touch on that in our interview. What I think is kind of so, one of the things that I find so interesting about your business is that, you know, Christina was sort of the accidental business owner, where she wasn't looking to create a business, but she literally was just thunderstruck by this idea and ran with it. And then it turned out that she reached a point where her health would not allow her to continue with the business. And so you then became another sort of accidental business owner, because this wasn't something that you thought you were going to be doing. Like, none of this was really on purpose per se. And yet you've had this amazingly successful business. So how was it that you came to enter this picture?
Well, after she had opened the business, Christina basically had a full schedule. She was still teaching during this time. So she had put this whole business concept, this business plan together. She was going in the morning, opening up Green Toes, getting the employees set for the day. Then she would go teach during the day, come back in the afternoon, and, you know, run the business and close up for the day.
Yeah, that's pretty intense.
She was pretty busy, you know, and then also on the weekends. You know, when you're a teacher, you don't work on Saturdays unless you're doing lesson plans and things preparing for the following week. Mm-hmm. But she was running a whole separate business as she was a full-time teacher too. So what ended up happening was during this time, she started developing some new symptoms of her multiple sclerosis that was leading to her having some issues. Some of it was cognitive issues, where she was having problems remembering things, tracking things. Then all of a sudden, she was having issues with one of her legs, and there was a little bit of a drag to the leg. And one of the, you know, biggest things, the most upsetting things for her, I mean, she loved teaching. She's a teacher. She loves to teach people, and she was really good at it. And one of her students mentioned, you know, Miss, what's wrong with your leg? And they were noticing that her leg was a little bit dragging, or she was leaning on things a little bit more. So first thing we had to do was, let's go see the neurologist. Let's see what's going on. They recommend that she got a MRI on her brain and her cervical spine, which is where usually when people have MS, those are the two largest areas that cause problems. Come to find out, she had a full-blown new lesion develop on her brain, and it was live and it was active, and it was affecting a lot of things that, you know, throughout her daily routine and just normal things we don't think about that we take for granted of just walking.
And her schedule was intense enough for like someone who is 100% healthy to have a full-time job and a pretty demanding side hustle.
Yeah.
that takes a lot out of you.
Right. So once we went to the neurologist basically recommended that she stop working. And, you know, I really didn't grasp it at that point. And one night she was having some, her body was hurting and she was in a little pain. So we thought, well, let's go put you in a hot bath so you can relax a little bit. And that's when everything kind of hit the fan a little bit. That's when she said, she looked at me and she said, we have to talk about a few things. And I was like, okay, you know, a little bit, it's like, okay, well, that's a weird way to start a sentence out.
Yeah, we have
to talk
about those are the conversations, you know, you just better get comfy because that's coming.
So she looks at me and she says, I have to stop working. And I said, okay, all right. And she goes, no, you don't understand. I have to stop working altogether. And I was so used to her being a teacher. So all I thought was, okay, when are you going to stop teaching? Go tell the, you know, the admin,
right.
admin and the principal that you need to stop. And she says, no. I have to stop everything. She looked at me square in the eyes. She said, and I have to stop Green Toes. And she goes, and I need you to take it over. And I looked at her and I said, absolutely not. I put my hands up in the air like, no. And it was very, I was pretty much put on the spot. And it felt like about an hour's time, but it took me about 45 seconds of like, absolutely no way. I don't know anything about, I was my first, I can't believe, you know, I'm usually a very positive person, but my first instinct was no, and no way. And once I looked at her and I thought about it, and it took me about, like I said, about 45 seconds. And I looked in her eyes and I waved my hands in front of her. I said, I'll take care of it. And the moment I said that, she just kind of sunk into the bathtub. Her eyes started to water. You could just see that she looked lighter and the weight was lifted off her. And I really, you know, as hesitant as I was, I really didn't want her dream to die, because even though it wasn't something that she, you know, thought of doing, it was a neat concept. You know, she put her heart into it, and it really was a dream, and I didn't want it to die. So I said, I'll take care of it, and the rest is history.
Who does not appreciate that story? I mean, that's a really lovely gesture, because this is a total departure from what you were previously doing. And I've had a lot of conversations with women over the years about going into a male-dominated industry and the challenges that poses for them. And it's... you know, there are areas of expertise where you're not really raised to be a general contractor if you're a girl, you know, typically. Dudes are not typically raised to open mani-pedi salons, right?
Right.
And so for you, what was it like? I mean, now the shoe's on the other foot, and you are now in a heavily dominated or heavily female-dominated industry. What did that feel like, and what things did you have to adjust to start wearing that skin as a salon business owner?
Well, you know, the funny thing is I was blessed to have a family full of women, full of girls. So I have three daughters. I have my wife. I have a female dog. I have two female cats. So
you're outnumbered, dude.
Yeah, I am way outnumbered in there. So I think that adjustment wasn't so bad for me. It was the fact that I knew nothing going into this. I mean, the services that I had probably experienced the most was maybe a massage, but a mani and pedi,
right.
I didn't know a lot about that. Facials and skincare, you know, waxing, I didn't know anything about that. So it was definitely an adjustment for that part, more than, you know, working with females. Working with females, I think, was easy for me to do. You know, I learned how to hire really good people, and people that I can have conversation with, people that are down to earth, people that get the concept. And because I've hired those people, you know, it's made my life easier. And, you know, Christina had two of the employees that I took over, you know, they're still with us today. And she luckily hired two great people to start us out with. And so I just... from there, kept hiring people and adding services that we wanted to do to grow our business. So, but the female part of it, I just had to lean on them, because they obviously knew more than me. They had experienced that. They'd been in the industry, or, I mean, leaning on my reps who were also female. So they were more than happy to help me through the process.
That's great. So you had a lot of support.
I had a lot of support. Yeah.
Good.
I had a lot of support. So it was, but as far as adjusting, it was just learning on the fly and keep learning. Mm-hmm. And I'm still learning. You know, it's we're over 6 years now and I'm still learning. So
aren't we all?
Yes. Yeah. And the moment I stop learning is the moment there's something wrong.
Yeah.
So.
And I think when you stop being curious, it creates a restlessness. You almost know that something is genuinely wrong. It's like, I haven't learned anything new recently. I know I have more to learn. What am I missing? I mean, I think a lot of people tend to be more paranoid that they're not thinking of something rather than complacent that they think that all of their bases are covered, especially entrepreneurs tend to be overachievers by nature, and we tend to be very hard on ourselves. But one story that you shared with me was about placing your first inventory order. And I'd like to emphasize at the start of the show that I want entrepreneurs to know that they are not alone in their struggles. And you had shared the story of when you had to place your first order for nail polish, not something that was part of your norm up until that point, right? And I thought it was such a great example of how we never stop needing to learn and to just sit there and figure it out. So share that story with us and just in general, how you go about overcoming challenges.
Well, you know, the first day I had to go in and tell the two employees that we had, I had to tell them that Christina was sick. And I told them that I was going to be taking over the business. I mean, can you imagine two employees have only been there for 3 months? We had only been open 3 months before I took over the business.
Wow.
So I'm sitting at a table with the two of them. And these are two women who have been in the industry for years. And I'm telling them that here I am, I'm taking over the business and Christina's sick and, everything's going to be fine. I'm just going to need to lean on you is what I told them. But can you imagine what they're thinking? They're thinking, I got to go out and find a job. I better start submitting my resume to other businesses.
Yeah, thinking, like, this isn't stable. This is my paycheck that's in jeopardy now. Yeah.
And we were already new. So obviously we didn't have a lot of customers coming through the door. We didn't have a lot of phone calls coming in, but I told them I needed to lean on them. So, one of my employees stepped up and said, well, we're going to need some products soon. I said, well, get me a list of product and I'll look at getting that ordered. And she gave me a list and there was literally like 200 items on there. And I'm like, 200 items? What do I have to learn all this? And I'm looking at the names of these things and I'm seeing Cutie Cocktail. I'm seeing Emerald City, Disco Inferno. What is Disco Inferno? I have no idea what this stuff is. What's a Disco Inferno? Is that like a, you think Disco Inferno, you're thinking dancing and stuff. I'm like, this is nail. What is this? It's a color, right? So an Emerald City is a color. And Cutie Cocktail, is product is help for the health of your cuticles, your cuticle oil. So it was just, it was very funny. And so I called the manufacturer and said, look, I need help with this. Do I need all this? I had to ask
her. Is this real?
It's not that I don't want to trust the employee, but, sometimes I there was a lot of product there and it was, do I need all this? And luckily she looked at the list of product that I sent over to her and she says, well, I don't think you're going to need all of this. So she was very good about helping me. And so I leaned on, my employees and I leaned on my reps and before you knew it, I knew what to order, what was too much, what was not enough, because we also, not only do you have what's retail, but you also have the back bar, what we use on the services. So, I mean, there were salts, sugars, lotions, oils, different scrubs, different scents, and they had different names to the scents. And then, of course, all the lacquer color. So there was a lot of product on there that it was a challenge. And the those commercials you see where the mind's blowing, my mind was being blown. I couldn't even get like halfway down the page, and I'm hearing boom, boom, boom. My mind's blowing away. So I said, what am I gonna do? So luckily I was able to just one day at a time and just take it one day at a time and keep learning, keep learning. And I was, my first year was me learning on the fly. And, Christina was, one thing that I didn't mention, after I had taken over Green Toes, my wife was basically bedridden for almost 6 months. So
oh my goodness.
I couldn't lean on her. So, 'cause she was sick. I needed to let her just be well, get better. And so it was learning on the fly.
Yeah.
Really learn on the fly. So I just did a lot of research on different companies, how they do things, how are we. And then I slowly started finding things that my wife had put together. And I was like, gosh, I wish I would have found that 3 months ago. You know, just things that she had put together that were so far, you know, that would have kept me 2 years of, you know, needing to know stuff that I needed to know. And she was so thorough with the process and protocols and the business plan. And I kept finding stuff little by little. And I was like, oh, I could have used that a couple months ago. And
cut the learning curve.
Yeah, yeah. But so it was good that I didn't find all her stuff, you know, all the details that she had put together. I mean, I followed as much as I could. And I'm pretty close to what she put together. You know, we're two different people, so there are some things that I've changed to make it easier for me as a person, individual, to operate a business. And there was stuff that she had put together that was the way she did it.
Mm-hmm.
But over time, I found my groove. And after about a year is when I literally was able to get out of my office and say, I can talk about this a little bit now. But the first year, I wouldn't talk to anybody about the business because I didn't have the knowledge or, you know, I didn't have any experience yet.
Yeah.
So,
Most people open a business like that having had experience, and then they want their own salon or they want their own business because they have built a better mousetrap, right? But you were never in the mousetrap industry to begin with.
Right,
so,
right.
I mean, a year is, I think, a pretty legit amount of time to get under your belt everything that you needed to go out and speak intelligently about what you did. And I think, much to your credit, and this is something that that I don't always see business owners do, and I wish that they would do more of, and that is to be less reluctant to ask for help and to lean on other people, even people who are your, you know, quote unquote, subordinates.
Mm-hmm.
Employees come to the table with their own life experiences, and chances are they've worked for somebody before they came and worked for you. And so to pick their brain and to not be shy about asking for their perspective, I think only makes the whole process stronger and the outcome better. And it's a real testament that those two employees are also still with you. So kudos to you, because that was a steep hill to climb.
Yeah, but I had to give my wife credit, though, because once I started finding all the business plans and all the protocols and things of that nature, it made my life so much easier.
Yeah.
I just kind of stuck to it because she was so thorough with that.
She had her game plan.
She did.
Mm-hmm.
And that game plan, once I was able to learn and follow it, I have to attribute a lot of our success to that. So I kept to the game plan of what she had put together, and I just kind of used my strengths of getting customers in the door. And
mm-hmm.
that's kind of what I kind of focused on, because I had employees that knew, and they knew what to follow, and they knew I wanted them to follow what Christina had put together.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, that's the way it was. It was just, you're going to do how you were taught to do this, and you're going to do it how Christina had put it together.
Yeah.
And of course, there's times where like, can we do this? Nope, that's not how we were put together. So, but you know, I value their input and I value what they want to do. And there's a lot of other products out there, and I stand strong to this is why we use this, and this is why we're going to continue to use this particular product, because we believe in it. And there was a reason why Christina chose this.
Mm-hmm. She had her protocols and they were purposeful.
Right.
And so whether it's the general public or it could be even from within a business with employees, I think that every business owner grows frustrated by a misconception either about their business or their industry. And like I said, sometimes that comes from the public. Sometimes there's misconceptions from within the company. But I think that this is especially true for service businesses, because what we offer is often intangible and therefore very subjective. People have a wide range of opinions about their experience. It's not like, here's your widget and everybody gets the exact same widget, right? So what is something about the salon industry or Green Toes in particular that you wish that people understood better?
That's a loaded question. there's a lot of things I think that consumers could know or should know about salons. You know, two things. One I'll touch on real quickly is not all salons are created equal as far as how they operate. Unfortunately, there's a lot of, if you're talking specifically, not day spas, but more the nail salon industry.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of you know, employees that are out there working without licenses. And these are licensed nail technicians or licensed cosmetologists that are working without a license. So they have never been taught, you know, the blood spill protocols. They've never been taught how to clean properly, the sanitation process. So there's a lot of things that they're missing in their protocol on how to operate a business and how to do it safely so the consumers don't get fungus or they don't get bacteria infections and things of that nature. So that's one of the biggest things. And everyone that we hire is an employee of ours, and everyone has to be licensed. And so when I bring in a new employee, that's one thing that I'm very specific about, and how we operate and how you keep things clean and how you treat your clients, because I don't want any of my patrons to come in and get an infection. And in a lot of salons, they have these bowls that have the jets to go through, and there's the water, and you know, they might drain the water, and sometimes they might spray a little something in there, but you have the backfill, the backwater that gets into the jets there. And so the moment they turn that water back on, all that old water that was in there goes right back in there and circulates with the new water that you put in your feet in for a pedicure. And so if you think about that, if someone had an open sore on their foot, or fungus on their foot, now that infection is in there. So licensed professionals are highly needed in the industry, and they're there for a reason, and they have to pass the regulations at the Arizona Board of Cosmetology. So it's really important that you find nail salons with licensed professionals, and you're not always going to find that. You know,
and is that something that's posted publicly or should be in a reputable salon? Because I know some people, if they don't, like if they didn't know you personally, or they're not getting a recommendation from a friend, like all things being equal in their mind, in their perception, many people will make up their mind based on price, right? And that's kind of like the default decision maker. But in order to for it to be more transparent, for them to be empowered to make a decision that's more based on value than on price, what are some things that consumers can look for when they're trying to find a salon where they know the standards are going to be very high and they're going to be hygienic? Do they look for licenses on the walls, or what kind of research can they do to protect themselves?
You know, unfortunately, there's It can be difficult for consumers. Every salon should have a licensed professional licenses hanging on the wall.
Okay.
And a lot of salons, the ones you see in the shopping centers, a lot of times you're going to see the owner is the main person that owns it, has the license, and then they teach the other employees there how to do certain things. There's going to be some holes that are missed because they didn't go to school. They didn't go to school for these particular reasons, but the licenses should be hanging on the wall. So at both of our locations, you know, we have licenses of all of our manicurists all hanging on the wall, all of our estheticians all hanging on the wall. Our massage therapists have to have a license. So everybody has to have a license in the industry. So it's, but the only other way you can, you need to know the person that you're getting your service from too. You know, if you don't know their name or don't know how to pronounce their name or don't know who they are specifically, you can't check the Arizona Board of Cosmetology. You can always check, you know, see if a person has a license.
Okay, that's good to know.
So, but you'd have to call the Arizona Board to do those things. So if you know the person's name, you can always check the name. Is it their real name? is the other question. So, you know, with the licenses hanging on our wall, some of them have photos on it. I wish they all did, but not all of them have photos on there. So you can see their face with the license hanging on the wall.
And it's easier to verify.
Yeah. But, you know, you can when you go into a salon, you can actually see if the place is clean or not. Some places look clean, what kind of products they use. Some businesses out there, another thing that they do is they don't use what they say they're using as far as product is concerned. So they have a salt that they're going to use in the pedicure to scrub your legs. You know, those salts may be a cheaper version of what they claim that they're using. We put everything out on the shelves. Everything's visible. So you're going to see our line. You're going to see our scrubs are sitting there, our sugars, our salts. You're going to see our lotions, our oils. You're going to see our lacquers are right on the wall, because, of course, you're going to choose your color from the palette wall. But you can see everything. Everything's out in the open.
So if someone's looking for a salon, they really need to be looking for transparency.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is a good tip, because I know some people get really concerned, myself included, about going to a salon and it's unknowingly going to get funky.
Well, and that's the hard part too, is You can get nail fungus not from just a salon. You can definitely get it from a salon, mm-hmm. but you can get it from wearing the wrong shoes, getting ingrown toenails, and then not treating the ingrown toenail right, and then it turns into an infection. So there's a lot of, sometimes people have fungus for various reasons, going into the gym, walking in the showers. There's a lot of ways you can get infections or fungus on your feet. Mm-hmm. But you definitely, we don't want to be spreading that.
Right.
And so that's why we follow certain protocols to make sure that our products are clean, our implements are clean. We don't do people who have fungus, known fungus, or a contaminant on their feet. So I have a notification that says when it's their first time visit, mm-hmm. you know, they have to sign off that they've read our service stop notification, because we can present this to you saying, hey, I'm sorry, but we can't do the service on you. And we've turned away clients because I felt uncomfortable about doing that. And it's a very sensitive situation, because you don't want to hurt the person's feelings. But
right.
at the same time, we can't, you know, get our own staff involved with that to where they're going to be having to deal with that, you know, or spread it, because it can become airborne. It can get on implements. It can get on the bowls. It can get on the footrest. It can get on things. It can get on the floor if someone has it, if it's dealt with,
mm-hmm.
right? So we have to, a lot of times, turn them away, because we don't want to, you know, get everybody else, you know,
right.
involved with that.
It's about everyone's well-being and everyone's experience.
Exactly.
We're going to take a quick break. For those joining us, I'm Stephanie Rising, a business coach and author, and this is Small Biz Big Voices, the podcast that celebrates the stories and impact of small business owners. We're broadcasting on Tucson Business Radio X, and with me today is Victor Thompson, the owner of Green Toes Day Spa. In 2015, the New York Times ran an article called Perfect Nails Poisoned Workers. And they shared the stories and statistics of salon workers who were slowly being poisoned over time by the chemicals that they handled every day. And, you know, some of these stories were heartbreaking. I mean, women were having miscarriages. They were carrying children to term, but the children had birth defects. And all of this was being traced back to the chemicals that you mentioned earlier in our interview. Share with us the choice to be an eco-friendly day spa. What does that choice mean for your staff and for your clients?
Well, I think all that started with Christina, as you know, she's a health conscious consumer. She eats healthy, she treats her body well, and then obviously she has multiple sclerosis. So what affects her, you know, what can she stay away from that doesn't trigger an episode?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, when you, like I said earlier, when you're walking by a nail salon, or if you go into a nail salon, it's, you can smell the chemicals.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's the cleaners that they use. Sometimes it's just the nail lacquer. Sometimes it's the removals. There's a lot of things that are very potent. And so, you know, some people get triggered right away with a massive headache. So I think, being that she's a health conscious consumer, I think that she has MS, and she wanted to, you know, that part of that concept was triggered to how do we serve people in a healthier fashion. And that's where this whole concept with the eco-friendly concept came from, was, you know, being able to give an alternative than what's out there, you know, a healthier option.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how, I mean, so, but Green Toes, you know, wasn't just created for the customer, it was also created for the employee.
Yes.
And so that's the neat thing about how Christina aligned this whole thing up and put this whole thing together, was to make a safe place for the employees, to make a safe place for consumers to come in and get be pampered.
What kind of feedback have you received from customers who have come in, and they typically have some sort of chemical sensitivity, or, you know, they do get that instant headache from acetone or some of the other smells? What have they shared with you?
Well, one of the first things I always hear is, wow, it smells so nice in here. Because their expectations come into a place that does nails.
They think
is they're going to be smelling the nail polishes. They're going to be smelling the acetones, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
So when you come in to either one of our studios, you don't smell those chemicals. So it's always more of a pleasant smell. It's more of like an essential oils, the product that we use in the sugar scrubs and the salts and the oils. You smell the scents of those, so it's very pleasant when you walk into it. It's airy. It's not stuffy. You're not bombarded. Your senses aren't bombarded with these chemical smells.
That's a nice change of pace. I rarely get my nails done because of that very reason. I can't stand the smell. the last time I had to get my nails done for a wedding, and I had to go in and they had to take off the gel lacquer, whatever the heck they put on my fingertips. And I had to soak in a bowl of acetone, and I just felt like a human straw, just sucking that all up and sticking it right into my bloodstream. And it gave me the willies, and I have not been back since. So I am so happy to find your spa. I am making an appointment. Last year, Green Toes expanded to a second location. So your original spa is located on 6th Avenue, and your new location is at Roller Coaster and Oracle. And I know a lot of business owners, including those that I work with, they've struggled with the decision of if or when to expand. How did you come to the decision to open a second location?
Well, there's a few reasons to this. One, Christina's dream didn't have just one in it. So I'm starting to fulfill the dream a little bit more. So part of her dream was
this is a big dream Christina had.
That's how crazy that was, that she had this crazy dream that had steps laid out to her, and it was so detailed. But I'm just starting to fulfill it little by little.
That's awesome.
But you know, as far as a business owner, the things that you look for when it's time to expand is, where are you at currently? We had several employees in our space. We had too many in the space on 6th Avenue. It's not a large building. Mm-hmm. And when is it time? Well, when we're booked out 2-3 weeks in advance, people are not getting in. We're turning away business. And that's how it was for a while, that we just were turning away business. People couldn't get in. So, any type of marketing efforts or any type of customers that are just looking on the internet or trying to find businesses that don't know about us yet, if they're finding us and they're giving us a call and they can't get in, well, they're just going to go right down the list to the next available person. So I'm missing a lot of opportunities for the consumers here in Tucson. So
so the opportunity costs started, or the lost opportunities were costing you more money.
Right.
Than...
Plus I was plateaued on what I can do out of that particular location. We already expanded that location twice. So during the first 6 years, we expanded the back part of the building as much as we could, and we added on the treatment rooms, like the massage and the facial room, and we added on also a private room for couples or individuals who want to come in and just have a space to themselves. So it's a room where you can come in with a girlfriend, mother, daughter, or anybody that just wants to come in two together and have that space to themselves. And so we're the only ones in Tucson that has a space like that available. So that was another concept.
Cool.
And that was my concept. I gotta take credit for that one.
Well, tip of the hat to you, because I did see that on your website, like all these different things. I mean, bat mitzvahs and bridal parties and just all of these groups that you're able to accommodate. I mean, it's very cool, because women do tend to have a more kind of communal attitude about how we like to spend our free time, and being able to grab some girlfriends or your family members and go to the spa and have a day together, but not be separated. It's like, it really is pleasant, relaxing time that you're spending together, and you're getting pampered and you can just kibitz. I thought that was just the neatest idea.
Yeah, as we tried to expand, we tried to figure out new ways to bring people in, and what could we do that's different that people enjoyed. And the private room is definitely a space that's enjoyable and memorable for a lot of people, because when they come in, it's just them two in there, and it's only designed for two people. So, like, for example, let's say you and I went, you and I would have that room to ourselves. We could have private conversation. We can hear each other, whisper if we wanted to. And, and it's just you and myself and then the manicurist doing our pedicures. And it's...
Well, so we should have done this podcast interview there.
There, we could have.
Next time.
Yeah.
So, I'm putting that on the list.
There you go. I'm ready for it.
And my last question for you is, if someone wanted to come and experience Green Toes, how do they go about making an appointment with you?
Well, they can do two things. They can either give us a call at either studio location, or they can go to our website and they can book an appointment right online. It's very simple.
Oh, great.
They can do it right from their mobile phone or right from a desktop.
And what is your web address?
It's www.greentoestucson.com.
All right. Awesome. And I will make sure that gets into the show notes as well. That concludes our interview, which went so quickly. I even had to skip a question, but you kind of, we touched on it and it was all woven into the interview. So nobody missed anything. Don't worry. The next thing I'm going to torture you with is the Proust questionnaire. Uh-oh. Are you ready?
I guess I'm as ready as I'm going to be.
So this was a parlor game that was popularized by the French essayist and novelist Marcel Proust. He believed that by answering 35 specific questions, an individual reveals their true nature. We're going to go through as many questions as we can in just 3 minutes. Are you ready?
Sure, let's do it.
Okay. Which words or phrases do you most overuse? I think you're in good company with
yeah,
that one.
Yeah, please.
What is your motto?
Oh, man, skip that one.
Skip that one?
Yeah.
Okay. What is your greatest regret?
These are lightning questions?
These are lightning questions.
Oh, man. Oh, my greatest regret. Not staying in soccer longer.
Oh, my God. That's mine.
Really?
Seriously?
Yeah. I was a really good soccer player when I was younger, and then I got out to play football. My mother cried. She so enjoyed to watch me play soccer when I was a kid, and I was very good at it. And that's probably my number one regret.
Well, at least you were on the team. I regret for not trying out for the team because I loved playing soccer just for fun.
Yeah.
But I was too chicken to try out.
I played in competitive soccer when I was little. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was a lot of fun. I do regret not staying into that sport.
Okay. Here's a light one. How would you like to die?
That's a light one. Peacefully in my sleep.
Fair enough. What or who is the greatest love of your life, in case you haven't made that abundantly clear already?
Yeah, I think everyone listening knows.
When and where were you happiest?
When and where? I'm happy now. I think life is great. You know, my family's doing well. My kids are doing well. I'm pretty happy right now. I'm very blessed with my family.
Good. And last but not least, what talent would you most like to have?
What talent? I'd like to be a better writer.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to be a better writer. That's probably it.
I think you have a book in you, my friend.
Oh,
this is quite the adventure you've been on. All right. That concludes our Proust lightning round. You are a very good sport. I'd love to have you chime in at the end of our last segment. Dear Coach gives our listeners the chance to have their emailed questions addressed. And today's segment is about the 4 signs that you need to fire a bad client. One statistic that has stuck with me for years is that the average American spends 100,000 hours of their life on the job. And I learned that little factoid early on in my business. And from that point forward, I was determined to only work with people I like. I don't have to be their best friend. We don't have to exchange friendship bracelets. But I have to at least be able to imagine enjoying their company over lunch. If I can imagine that during a sales meeting, I know I'll like having them as a client. Conversely, if someone makes you so crazy in the time it takes to eat a taco, chances are you're not going to enjoy working with them. So this all sounds very obvious in theory, but in practice, the pressures to make payroll or cover other expenses sometimes compel us to keep clients who are actually toxic to our business, if not our very souls. We keep them for the revenue, but they can take more time and more resources than you're being compensated for. And the toll on morale and on you can be rather significant. So here are some signs to look for when considering whether it's time to part company. First, there's the nitpicker. Think about that client who just picks at every expense and insists that tasks should take less time. They just know that you are shortchanging them and insist that what you are doing for them wouldn't take others in your field as long to complete. They're always unreasonably demanding that you adjust the bill, and they constantly question your integrity. These are all red flags that they are prime candidates for firing. Next is who I call the 911 operator, because the only calls they know how to make are emergency ones. No one likes to be up against constant chaotic deadlines. And trying to do something quickly and under pressure can stifle your creativity and your thoroughness. But some people are addicted to adrenaline, and they like to stay in urgent mode all the time. But living the urgent is a high-stress way to live life, and the toll it takes on the body and spirit is substantial. A better client choice is someone who adequately plans and prepares his time so that emergencies are occasional and understandable, not habitual. Then we have the soul-sucking micromanager. Typically, clients come to you because they have a problem, and you take them on because you know how to solve it. But some clients, for whatever reason, they just won't let you solve their problem. They insist on having to approve every step along the way and must be involved in every single detail. These are the same people who erroneously believe that good management entails micromanaging their own employees, so they invariably transfer that approach to their vendors. This, in turn, can destroy your morale and that of your employees. Really try to seek out the clients who hire you to solve a problem, and they're willing to give you the latitude to bring your experience to the table and help them to resolve their issue. Last but not least, we have the hider. I have some sympathy for these folks. On the surface, it seems like delegation is a completely foreign skill to them. But most business owners know that in order to be successful, you can't do it all alone. Highly effective people develop those around them, as Victor has done, so they can consistently delegate tasks that they don't have the time or the skill to do. If your client refuses to let go of anything and insists on doing the very things that you were hired to do, chances are something deeper is going on. There are business owners out there who prefer to work in their business rather than on their business because they're actually hiding from doing something that makes them uncomfortable. They often have some fear that is ruling their decisions because they know that if they stop clinging to their tasks and they actually hand over that paperwork to somebody else, they don't have anything else to hide behind. They have to go out into the wider world and they have to grow their business. And this freaks them out. The problem is that their discomfort bleeds over to your ability to function. So look for those clients that do what they do best and they delegate the rest. Victor, we have a few minutes left. What advice or lessons could you add to that list?
Customers is, you never want to do that. It's a hard choice to make. I think you just have to really, those are definitely some challenging people the list of people you read there. I think you just have to kind of play it by ear and see how much it's affecting your business. If it's something that you really need to do or not. No one wants to fire a customer.
Yeah.
Especially in this day and age where customers can say what they want, whether it's right or wrong, leave a review or bash you out in the public because you've let them go. And, it's hard because the owner doesn't always have a chance to, we don't want to tell consumers that this customer's completely wrong. We've tried our best to do what we can do here, but at the same time, what other options do you have,
And that's stressful when it's a one-sided story like that. And I think that oftentimes, like these four people that I just described, I would say at least 50% of the time, if you have a diplomatic and reasonable conversation with them and you bring these things to their attention, half the time they're able to keep themselves in check. And maybe they've just formed their own habits and nobody's ever gently pushed back at them before because they're used to dealing with employees and they're used to kind of bulldozing their employees. But really when they're dealing with a vendor, they're dealing with a peer. Mm-hmm. You're also a business owner, right?
Well, yeah. And I wish more consumers, if they had a problem, they would come to me.
Yeah.
Because then I can listen to the problem. I can see if there's something that I can help with or resolve if there is an issue. Mm-hmm. But we don't always get the chance to do that.
They just disappear.
They just disappear, or like I said, they'll go out and leave some kind of review about your business, and I never even had an opportunity to make it better,
yeah.
to make it right, if needed to be, or if it's something that's like, you know, one of these guests or these clients that you've, you know, your list there that you read, if it's someone like that, sometimes it's better that they just leave and leave quietly.
Mm-hmm.
But if they don't leave quietly, then and you didn't have a chance to resolve any issues, it's tough, because what are you going to do from there, you know?
I think most, the way that I've made my peace with this in the past, and these are very much examples that I draw on from either conversations that I've had with my clients and kind of these personalities that they're up against, or clients that I used to have to serve in my previous life before I started my own business and I had a little more control over who I got to collaborate with. And I think that there's such a huge price to pay when everyone in your office knows that when that phone rings and they see a particular phone number, everyone cringes. Like if universally this person is like loathed and every interaction is just filled with dread. Psychologically, that's a horrible use of energy. Mm-hmm. And also clients who tend to be that demanding also tend to be oblivious in terms of what they're asking for in relation to what they're willing to pay you for. And so, you know, I'm by no means advocating going out and just saying, well, if you don't say hello to me and you don't have a smile on your face with every interaction, then I will never deal with you. But I think that there's kind of this baseline of common sense and common courtesy that has to exist in a person in order to do business with them, or kind of what's almost like, what's the point of owning your own business if you don't get to make those choices? Do you think that that's too hardcore a statement to make?
No. I think, like I said, I think you just have to do what you have to do, and it's a judgment call on the owner.
To
make those calls, or a manager. You know, I have a quick story that we had a customer. This goes back to what we were talking about earlier. I had a customer that got very upset that we wouldn't work on them because they had fungus on their feet, and they wrote a long email, and I had to basically tell this person that, you know, my staff made the right choice in not working on you, and I even cited a section from the Board of Cosmetology. I said, look, this we're not supposed to. There's a lot of people in this industry, a lot of salons that will work on those.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this person was used to, was, you know, so such and such salon worked on my feet, such and such salon worked on my feet. Well, that's fine, but now they're contaminating their tools, they're contaminating their bowls, they're contaminating
right.
the employees, and they're probably passing along all this, you know, this
to other clients. They're not protecting other people.
I had to let this person know that my staff made the right choice. And I backed them up 100%, and here's why. And I cited that, but I never heard back from the person. But what can you do?
Yeah.
But you in the service industry, you're not going to make everybody happy. You want to, you try
yeah.
to.
Yes.
But it is very difficult to do that. But you know, we do our best to try to make everybody happy. I tell all of my staff, you know, make sure you thank everybody. Make sure you say hello to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you make eye contact with everybody, and make sure they had a great service every single time, every day,
yeah,
all the time. You know, that's and I preach that at meetings all the time, every day, every customer, every time. It's the biggest thing I talk about.
See,
all the time.
You do have a motto.
Well,
we didn't have to skip that.
I have more than that one, but that could be one for my staff. So.
Well, that brings us to the end of today's episode. If you have a question or problem you'd like for us to talk about during our Dear Coach segment, please email me at stephanie@therisingeffect.com. You can also find today's show notes on my Small Biz Big Voices Facebook page. My thanks again to my guest, Victor Thompson of Green Toes Day Spa, my producer, Mark Bishop, and to you for joining us on Small Biz Big Voices. Mm-hmm.